All right, we're going to get started with the Coca-Cola Company. Thank you, James Quincey, who is the president of the European Group for Coke. We're coming to our conference this year. Very much look forward to your commentary. Thanks.
Thank you. Thanks, Bill. Good afternoon, everyone. It's nice to be back at the Deutsche Bank conference, and I'm particularly pleased to see the room has warmed up a little, so hopefully the audience will be friendly. We've also got here Gary, our CFO, and Jackson Kelly, our head of investor relations. So hopefully you'll agree with me. I've got some good things to share about what's going on at the Coca-Cola Company and talk a little bit about why we are optimistic about the future. So I'm going to decline to make the traditional joke about this page. Be different. And refer you just to the 10K. I'm sure you've had ample time to see this thousands of times. And let me start by just winding the clock back a little to our 2020 vision. This is something we kicked off at the back end of back in 2009 and sort of back end of 2008. And essentially, as many of you will have seen because you've got a copy, it's a roadmap. It's a roadmap that tells you where we want to go and how we want to get there. And it's also a roadmap that encompasses the whole system for Coca-Cola. It's the Coca-Cola Company and its bottling partners talking about how we want to win together. Now, this 2020 vision sets within it a number of very, very clear expectations on the road through to 2020 about how we're going to grow volume faster than the industry, how we're going to get pricing, how we're going to gain both volume and value share, how we're going to grow revenues faster than costs, and how we're going to leverage our assets. So the 2020 vision is more than just a set of quantifiable metrics. It's about creating value for our share owners whilst also making a lasting and meaningful difference to the communities in which we operate. It's about earning our social license each and every day. So I wanted to start just by sharing a quick video with you that gives you a flavor of how this vision is working and some of the successes around the world. If we could run the first video, please. gave you a bit of a flavor for the sort of things we've been doing, not just in the hard numbers, but across the whole of the vision that we've set out for 2020. Now, of course, there are some hard numbers in that. Regarding the very specific financial expectations of the long-term growth model, we have set out what we're looking for over the long term, and that, as you can see on this page, is the 3 to 4% in terms of volume, 6 to 8 in terms of operating income, comparable and currency neutral, and high single digit in EPS. And as you can see also on this slide, those red bars that stack up above the targets are the 3-year CAGRs. Quite clearly, we have been consistently delivering against our long-term growth targets in one of the most difficult macroeconomic environments that we've seen for a very long time, certainly in my lifetime. So very strong and solid performance against the hard numbers. And our success has not just been in the absolute numbers, but also in the relative numbers. Since we started our 2020 vision, we have also outperformed both personal consumption expenditure and the global NARTD industry. We have been able to push ahead and take not just gains in volume share, but also in value share. In the end, it's the great brands and the great execution that allowed us to do this. Our growth algorithm is working. But that's the past. You're all interested in the future. And as we start to look forward out to 2020 on what remains to be done, we can see that the growth opportunity is still abundant. Because our 2020 vision is rooted in the very fact that we participate in a high growth industry with very favorable demographic trends. As you can see here, what essentially happens is the growth of the middle class creates increased personal consumption expenditure. That interest then increases in both convenience and packaged goods, which fuel one of the most exciting sectors in the whole of consumer goods, which is the non-alcoholic ready-to-drink market and the retail value of that category. So opportunities exist for us across the globe and not just those emblematic markets that come first to mind. So you can see it's easy to see why we ended that video about how we're excited of what is yet to come. Now let me move more specifically from the global sphere to what's happening in Europe. The Europe market is the largest NARTD industry profit pool in the world. Despite the economic crisis, still the largest retail value pool of the NARTD industry. And it is projected to grow out through to 2020. Europe, as you know, is something over half a billion people. The teenage population, the under 20s, is about 20% of the population. This may be a somewhat mature market, but in fact it still accounts for a quarter of the global GDP, despite our underrepresentation in population. And we see this growing. And we see this growing not just in aggregate, but very importantly for us in the sparkling category. Because in the end, this, the world's largest NARTD profit pool, the largest and most valuable category within that is the sparkling beverage category. How do we look in Europe? We're structured with four business units. In rough terms, so you can equate that to the Coca-Cola system, the Northwest Europe group, which is about a third of our business in volume, is almost equivalent to Coca-Cola Enterprises. Central and Southern Europe, another third, is approximately equal to Coca-Cola Hellenic. And the rest of the business is split between our partners in Iberia and our own company-owned bottler in Germany. And whilst we only represent 14% of the volume of the Coca-Cola system globally, a bit like the European economy, we represent a little over a quarter of Coca-Cola's global operating income. It's a large and valuable market set for growth. And not only that, as I said, sparkling is the most important and most valuable category. We own four of the five top sparkling brands in Europe. What's been happening over time to this market and to ourselves? I talked a little earlier about how wealth creation and personal consumption growth levels fuel and is quite correlated with the growth of the NARTD industry. As you can see, this is also true in Europe, for good or for bad. Both pre-crisis and post-crisis, this has been a reasonably strong relationship. And obviously no one wants to be in post-crisis too much longer. But in the end, the NARTD industry, despite the crisis, has outperformed the broader consumer goods sector. It's still the best place to be in this crisis. And I think this just reinforces why we find this industry so interesting and so resilient. And so if that's the industry, how have we done? We've outperformed too. We've outperformed because although we can't control the economics as much as we'd like to, we can control how we compete in the NARTD industry. And this goes back to our 2020 vision and having very clear and very decisive goals. Like I said earlier, we said in the 2020 vision we're going to gain volume and value share and we're going to take price. And as you can see, since the start of this economic crisis, we have gained not only volume share but value share. We've realized positive price and mix and we've maintained our margins. That's because the strategy is founded on great brand strength and because we've invested despite the tough times. We've been able to do that and maintain those investments because we have focused strategies and clear objectives against which we're trying to manage those strategies. That's what leaves us in the preeminent position in sparkling. And so as we look forward and say, what are we doing against these objectives? How will we take this business forward? We will take those four of the top five brands in sparkling and we will continue to drive growth. We believe as yet, despite being the most valuable category, there is untapped potential for the sparkling category, and I will talk a little bit about that as we go further on. So that's the first strategy, continue to drive the sparkling beverages. Secondly and additionally, consistent with our 2020 vision, we will also selectively strengthen our stills portfolio to compete in those categories of value and of interest to us. Now, as with anything in life, the starting point for executing any strategy begins with understanding the granularity and the texture of the opportunities. So let me say a little bit about how we see the opportunities across Europe. And I guess, somewhat curiously, let me start with the idea that opportunities are mindset. Our companies always sought ways to create demand for our products and worked hard to meet the changing needs of the consumers and our customers. Now, I know that there may be some skeptics in the room. Now, different times of change, the challenges we face today are different and more serious somehow than in the past. And after all, to hear it told by some, our industry is in trouble. The economy is dead on its feet. Unemployment is worsening and the recession won't go away. Our industry is mature and might even be passé in today's health food orientated society. And there is uncertainty about the external operating environment and regulatory situation with respect to packaging, ingredients and labeling. And I read very precisely those statements, which you might have found slightly curious, and you may have heard those statements before. But those precise words are not new. They are, in fact, direct quotes given by the late and former chairman and chief executive of Coca-Cola, Roberto Goizueta, in a speech in the U.S. in 1982. That was more than 30 years ago. We have successfully faced challenges like this before. After all, in the words of Robert Woodruff, the world belongs to the discontented. So opportunity is a mindset. Now, let me do a little bit of texture in a more, a less kind of theoretical sense. Let me talk a little bit about the macro opportunities, the macroeconomic environment, how we see the customer and channel landscape changing, and in fact, some of the consumer dynamics. Over the recent years, we've seen a lot of changes in these areas. So what I'm going to do is just do a little page, one on each one, give you a flavor of how we see it. Firstly, on the macroeconomic environment. Clearly, in Europe, the macroeconomic environment remains uncertain for 2013. Persistent high unemployment, coupled with severe austerity measures, these all dampen consumer sentiment and spending. However, it is important to remember that these conditions do vary by region. Understanding this is one of the keys to being able to take advantage of the segmentation of details, ensuring the relevance of our marketing programs and our packaging and pricing programs across Europe. And when we begin to look forward, we do see the projections beginning to improve from 2014 onwards. Now, the timing and the velocity of this recovery is likely to differ by region across Europe, and we will again use our insights into segmentation to take advantage of those opportunities as and when they occur across Europe. But finally, let me say we are optimistic that the economic conditions will, in fact, gradually improve, and the personal consumption will begin to again fuel the growth of the NARTD industry out through to 2020. Let me move to a second area. Let me move to the area of the changing customer landscape. You know, this has been evolving for many decades, and it's evolved quite a lot over the last few. As an illustration, you know, since the beginning of this century, there was a big wave of expansion of the discounters. But since the economic crisis has started, somewhat surprisingly, that has slowed down. In fact, discounters have only increased their share as a channel by 1 point since 2008. Other changes you're seeing as a response to both their growth and their own response to the slowdown. Discounters have started adding premium brands. So very often the so-called hard discounters would only carry their own private labels. Now, in order to improve performance as the benefits of geographic expansion slow down, you see them bringing in a number of A brands to renovate and renew their own customer base. We see how hypermarkets and supermarkets have responded to the incursions of discounters and the ongoing economic crisis by trying to reposition themselves in the price perception of consumers, heavier promotional spend, trying to stay competitive in these difficult times. We've also seen a change in the way that the shopping patterns are occurring. The rise of convenience and e-commerce, the shift of the constrained shopping purse looking instead of doing perhaps monthly and weekly shopping to doing weekly and daily shopping, seeing the expansion of the space race of the retailers instead of being about hypermarkets, shifting and being about more in-town and convenience stores. All through these evolving changes, we have constantly sought ways to create value with these customers, and those are where the opportunities lie. But let me also make one other point, critically important for the NARTD industry, and in particular, the Coca-Cola company and its system. The decline that has occurred in the on-premise and what that could mean to going into the future. You can see in this chart that actually the on-premise, bars, restaurants, hotels, the on-the-go business, has actually suffered disproportionately in this economic crisis. And this is a negative mix effect for us, given that it's high profitability. We have been able, within all that we've done, to mitigate this effect during the crisis, which actually sets us up with a lovely opportunity as and when the economy starts to recover and this channel begins to rebound and disproportionately contribute to growth and fuel our success as a tailwind going forward. Last bucket of opportunities. Thirdly, talking about how the consumer's evolving. Now, as a marketing company with deep expertise in research, obviously we could go on quite a while about any one and all of these trends in detail, and that's not my objective today. It is clear, however, that there are some macro trends at work and that consumers around the world are choosing brands that share their values and aspirations for a better world and a better life. It is critical that we stay in tune with these changes and that we are able to anticipate them and seek out the opportunities to capitalize on them across Europe. And again, Europe is not an average. You could call out aging, and it's quite clear that the pyramid of the demographics in Europe is clearly getting older. But that's not to say that there is not growth in the youth population. Whilst it might be stagnant on average across Europe, there will be quite considerable growth in teens in France, for example. Knowing where this growth is going to occur will help us target and focus our strategies. Knowing how people view well-being and how they use their thoughts on well-being to shape their choices and categories will also be important to us. And I'll come back to more about what we're doing on promoting the category shortly. So in summary, we believe there are yet substantial opportunities for growth across Europe for our whole portfolio, whether that be for sparkling beverages or for stills. I use here an example, let me show you here that Europe is tremendously underpenetrated in sparkling beverages compared to many other developed markets around the world. So in Europe, sparkling beverages only account for 31% of the volume, yet in Mexico, Australia, the US and Canada, it is much, much more. So we see tremendous opportunity for sparkling beverages to penetrate and grow their share of the NARTD industry. And remember, and let me remind you again, we own 4 of the top 5 sparkling brands. Now, with respect to the stills portfolio, it is less developed here in Europe than other parts of our global business. Yet we have taken the choice to selectively and strategically strengthen that portfolio and play where there is value to us. We are doing that through a combination of the classic 3-part build, buy, borrow, and looking where possible to drive value for the system in the most attractive segments of the stills industry. And I'll give an example later on. So having set out that we've got clear strategies, that we believe strongly in the opportunities for share gain and for industry growth, let me tell you a little bit about how we plan to go about seizing those opportunities. Firstly, of course, everything about driving sparkling beverages begins with brand Coca-Cola, the world's most valuable brand. We will actively not just market our brands, but promote the category. And at the same time, we will continue winning and executing with excellence by changing and adapting our price packaging architecture and working with customers to create shared value to drive the growth of Coca-Cola in Europe. This will be at the forefront of driving our sparkling strategy. Now, I said I would talk about promoting the category. Here we're very clear, and I'm very clear, that our brands and products absolutely have a legitimate role in everyone's daily life. Our efforts around re-establishing the perceptions of the Coca-Cola brand, the cola category, and our company start with 2 fundamental beliefs. 1, transparency and choice. 2, movement is happiness, and happiness is movement. And we are bringing those 2 beliefs to life through many things, but let me use the example of what we recently announced as our 4 global commitments to helping to contribute to the solution to this big problem, which is the obesity crisis affecting Europe and many other parts of the world. So what were these 4 global commitments? 1, we committed to offer low and no calorie options everywhere we operate. Of the roughly 145 brands in Europe we already sell, we have 80 of those as low and no calorie. But we're going to expand that. We're going to ensure the distribution is everywhere. We're going to ensure the packaging is there. We're going to ensure the price points are there so that people really and truly have the choice that perhaps they somehow don't have on all other categories. It's a choice. Secondly, it's incumbent on us as one of the industry leaders to provide transparent nutritional information. There's no point having choice unless you have the information with which to exercise that. So we have begun a program globally of committing to having calorie information on the front of every package. Choice, information. And we will support those two things by investing a step up here in Europe around active living. We've committed globally to supporting physical activity in every country we do business. We already in Europe operate some 90 grassroots programs that make more than 3 million people active per year. But we recognize that this is only the beginning for our contribution to this part of solving the obesity crisis, and we are committed to stepping up our investments and our partnerships with third parties in these activities. And lastly, marketing responsibly. There's no point providing choice, providing information, and promoting active lifestyle if somehow the marketing is not done responsibly. So we've committed again to no advertising for under 12-year-olds anywhere in the world. And we're not doing this on our own. We have engaged clearly, not just with governments, but with other stakeholders to push this forward and to try and make a difference to help all the communities in which we operate. Secondly, marketing our brands. We have consistently invested in our brands through world-class marketing and commercial strategies. For our company and our brands, it's about simple moments of pleasure over billions of times a day for, at times, pennies. It's about inspiring moments of optimism and happiness. And happiness is sharing, whether that be with society, with friends, with family. We can always find a moment for Coca-Cola. So, of course, it would be utterly remiss of me, and probably a first, if someone from Coca-Cola didn't show a couple of ads. So I want to share a couple here with you. The first one, that's called Be OK, it'll be clear why in a second, is based on a couple of insights, and it's around promoting the category. It's very clear. People are happier when they move, and people want the information so they can make their own personal choice. So the first ad is going to be in the space of promoting the category and supporting those global commitments that I just talked about. The second ad is about sharing with society. And the first thing you'll notice, and I want to underscore it, is this is not stories in the second ad about actors or made-up stories. These are real people really doing these things. I won't reveal what the ad is completely, but let me underscore this is real people doing what they want to do. And I think in the context of the current economic climate, it really is a fantastic set of messages that these people bring to us. So if we could run the next reel, please. Moments of happiness. Now, of course, we need to translate the building of the equity in the brand and the love of the Coca-Cola brand and turn it into actually selling bottles and cans through channels. And I think the whole idea of occasion, brand, package, price, and channel colloquially known as the OBPPC, has been and is a core skill at the Coca-Cola Company and within the Coca-Cola system. So it is critical that we get the right brands in the right packages, in the right price points, in the right channels. And so this then becomes our mechanism to create shared value with the customers. And let me try and illustrate that, perhaps with an example of a market, and try to explain the funny little character in the middle of the page. Germany. Germany, as those of you who are reasonably long-time followers of the Coca-Cola Company will know, our business in the German market 7 or 8 years ago was in bad shape. The bottling system was ineffective and needed to be consolidated. Deposit laws had come in. Lots of things had gone wrong. But today, almost a decade later, we can stand here and say the German business is back on the road to health, and it has had one of the best track runs through this economic crisis. And how have we done that? How have we been rebuilding the health of the German business? Of course, there was much done on the marketing front, but let me just talk a little bit about the pricing and packaging. We now have been able to establish in the marketplace new packages, 250 ml cans, 330 milliliter can, at good price points. And we've been able to establish other one-way PET options in the marketplace. We've also been able to drive increased accessibility and affordability to our products by reinvigorating, not just through investments in crates and bottles, but by giving personality and marketing love to the returnable PET bottle. That's the point of the little symbol in the middle there, the little red crate. That is, in fact, Kurt the Crate. He has become an emblematic symbol of not just affordability of the Coca-Cola products, but our commitment to sustainability and to returnability in Germany. And the combination of all these packaging options, one-way, returnable, bottles, cans, different price points in different channels, plus, of course, the marketing programs to increase the zeros and lights, has led to, as I said, an invigoration of the German business. And let me give one data point that signifies that. Since the beginning of the 2020 vision, we have added more than 1 million shopping households in Germany back to the business and successfully grown market share. OBPPC works. Let me lastly move on to winning with our customers. Our business, of course, has to be done through the customers. It's not good enough just to market the brands and have great OBPPC architecture. We engage through the vehicle of shopper insights and category management and other tools to work with customers so that we can create shared value together. So it's winning as a system with the customers. And when we leverage those shopper insights and strong brands, we come up with all manner of relevant programs that help that channel or that customer capture the shopping opportunity. And actually, we go one step further sometimes. Because if I take the example of Spain, and I go back to the point I made about the on-premise being such a profitable channel to us, we have even gone to the extent of just trying to promote the channel. Because in reality, if there's more traffic in that channel, we will benefit disproportionately. So what I want to do is just run an ad that shows you how we're going the next stage beyond just promoting our brands and our packages and to promoting those channels of most return to us. If I could run the last ad, please.
Every time a bar closes, 100 songs are lost forever. 1,000 I love yous vanish and no more goals are scored, just near misses skimming the goalpost. Because in bars, we declare our love, we write movie scripts, and we even draft the Constitution. Here, people are either into drinking at the bar or sitting at a table, but we're all into bars. It's in our DNA. The satellites detect a bar every 18 seconds. If you can't find someone, they're probably in the bar. The largest social network is called Bar. Because we like to see each other, actually touch people, and spend time together. And together, we're going to help out our bars. It's where we always feel happy. Blessed Bar.
I think you can imagine, in a country like Spain with such economic difficulties and the number of bars closing, this had tremendous mediatic effect over and above running the advert in the country, and produced a tremendous degree of support from stakeholders for us trying to increase employment effectively in the bars. That's sparkling. I said I'd bring out one example of how we're trying to selectively strengthen our stills portfolio. So let me turn to the Innocent brand. This brand started as a smoothie and now actually has turned into one of the fastest growing premium juice brands in Europe, already in over a dozen countries. Since the time of our investment in 2009, in the white heat of the crisis, this business has doubled in revenue and it's doubled its volume share. It is the leading growth engine for chilled juice in Europe. And that is just one example of what we plan to do across our stills portfolio, whether it be the build, buy, or borrow. So, in summary, I started this afternoon talking about our high expectations set by 2020 Vision and how it's a roadmap for where we want to go and how we plan to get there. And while we're all following the roadmap, each operating group, each business unit, each individual market, we will, of course, all get there with a slightly different journey to achieving our goals. For me and my team, we consider ourselves fortunate to be competing and winning in the most valuable profit pool in the world, Europe. Since the end of 2008, and during one of the most difficult economic times, we have been able to gain both volume and value share and expand our leadership. We've realized positive price mix, and we've maintained our margins. We're also keenly aware that today's economic climate is not perfect, but we recognize that there is tremendous runway for growth ahead of us, both for our sparkling beverages and the expansion of our broader portfolio. And we're crystal clear on why we do what we do. Our mission is to refresh the world, inspire moments of optimism and happiness, and to create sustainable value for our shareholders while making a difference. Thank you very much.
We have about 5 minutes for questions. Hey, James, can you just comment on the current environment? I mean, we obviously heard from CCE yesterday, and I'm sure you're probably sick of this question by now, but can you just comment broadly on like what you're seeing now and how much of it is the weather versus how much you think is, you know, the macro versus maybe some more permanent consumption impairment?
I think 2013, I mean, if we wind the clock back a little, back end of the fourth quarter last year, I think in a number of the investor calls for the results, we were quite clear in saying we expected 2013 to be an uncertain year in Europe, that it could be volatile or bumpy, and you know that our thoughts on economic improvement were more 2014 and beyond, and that's largely what I've just said in this presentation. So I think that the macro, in the macroeconomic sense, I don't think we're surprised by what's happened so far. In Europe, it might be a fraction lower than the forecast that were out in October, November last year.
Yeah.
Clearly, the weather, you know, is no one was wishing for the worst ever winter, the worst ever spring, the worst ever, you know, choose your acronym. So I think we weren't planning for that weather, and that's clearly affecting the business. And obviously, we're looking forward to the summer being more normal, and I think that will, whatever the expression is, when the tide goes out, we'll see who was wearing swimming trunks and who wasn't.
Perfect. Other questions? I just want to see them back there.
And cunningly hidden behind the pillar.
I know this isn't really your area, but I wonder if you could say a bit about the bottling sort of hokey-cokey in the US in terms of buying in, doing back out, what you can say about that.
I'm absolutely sure you're right that it's not my area. So I'm going to invite Gary to pop up and just make a few comments on the hokey coke. I think that's a new novel way of describing
it. Let me see if I can address it this way. Within the U.S., we now own about 90% of the volume in the U.S. We did announce earlier this year that we're going to start refranchising. We had said that we would refranchise the U.S. We believe in the franchise system. So we have started with five of our current existing U.S. bottling partners. They are going to get larger. And as part of that, it's going to be a slow process, so it's not a huge big bang. It's going to be slower, I think, than some imagined. That's because when you have to, when you run a business as detailed as a bottling business, you really have to get into the details to ensure that you never miss a customer delivery, that you are meeting customer requirements. And to, as we redo the structure, we've got to get common systems installed across the bottling system. So that will play out over this year, early next year. We'll start then, and really a test, if you will, to ensure that it works for the first five. Once we know that what we have works, we'll then go back and look at doing a lot more of the U.S. But our intent would be over the next few years to refranchise the majority of the U.S.
This might have a quick answer. I'm sure you're aware of what happened to Pepsi in Thailand with their bottler deciding to launch their own brand. I was just curious if that event has any knock-on effects for your bottlers in terms of people who want to negotiate or, you know, think maybe we have a little more leverage than we thought we did.
We have a wonderful bottler in Thailand. We happen to own 49% of it. We are very happy with our partnership. They are very happy in the massive share gains that we've taken in Thailand. So we are extremely happy with the way things have turned out.
So James, you know, given the margin structure of your business, do you think that's an opportunity or a curse? You know what I mean? Like, they're so high already. I guess they're the second largest, very close to Latin America relative to everything else in the business. So do you like having that profitability? Do you think there's still upside there? Or is it kind of like, don't screw up the margin structure in Europe?
You sound like Eric.
I don't know whether it's a margin or a curse. It just is.
Yeah.
And I certainly hope it doesn't go away, because that would be extremely painful. So we're very clear. You know, the business can grow from where we are, and that's the starting point. We have a fabulous business in Europe. It is high margin. It is profitable, but it can grow. It has grown pre-crisis when the economy was slightly better. We're winning share both in volume and value now. We're investing in our brand so that when the corner does turn, and it will, we will benefit disproportionately, and we will benefit disproportionately at very good margins. So I'll stay where I am. Thank you very much.
Just as a related question, so given really probably consumer behavior that you've never experienced historically in terms of the economic malaise and consumer pullback, how are you managing your product mix in package type or in channel type, you know, I guess as well as you are, they've been pulling down a little bit in terms of product mix to future consumption from immediate consumption, but it's been a relatively moderate deterioration versus, you know, what you would, you know, have thought given unemployment in youth as high as it is and the overall fall in consumption. Thanks.
Clearly, this is the global economic crisis of our time. I mean, the last one was probably the Depression. Not even Gary was around then. I certainly wasn't. I had to go for the cheap shot. He's beating me up all day. But let me tell you that this is not the first economic crisis that ever has happened. And I can say that I personally was in Argentina when it melted down in 2001 and 2002. And it was in that one country was much more severe than what we've experienced in Europe, and a number of other managers. I mean, we have global talent at Coca-Cola. A number of them have already been in countries that have melted down. So this is not something that conceptually is new to us. It's clearly new in terms of the global scale. And so we have been able to apply our learnings from previous crises to what to do both with the marketing and how to stay relevant for the consumers, but also with the pricing and packaging to do exactly what you say, which is to try and mitigate the obvious mixed effect and the somewhat desirable need to improve affordability in some packages to retain people in the category, whether that be future or immediate consumption, but offset it, whether by promoting channels or packages or brands that mitigate that negative mix effect. And that is one of the things that we've learned over country crises, over the history of Coca-Cola, that we've been able to apply during this global crisis to somewhat good effect, allowing us to gain share and maintain the category as one of the most exciting places to be in Europe in this tough environment.
So in terms of that, can you share a couple of specifics of what you're doing to maintain to preserve the future versus immediate consumption in the package? Like, so what are the other than the creative that you showed today?
Sure. I mean, one of the keys is is the entry price to the category. So you'll have seen in Europe the rollout of new, smaller packages at lower price points, often a 250 ml can or a 250 ml PET bottle, depending on where you are, to bring down the entry price of the category. So it maintains people in the category. Clearly, you're offering up value there. I mean, it's at a discount to your standard 500 ml or 330 ml can. But we've also brought in smaller PET bottles, lower price points, but often the margin has been sustained. And then in the future consumption, we've expanded the range of packages because in the end, everyone doesn't suffer equally, not in terms of countries and not even within a country. So of course there will be pockets of value. Many of you in Paris, you travel to London, it's as though the global crisis had never occurred. That's not true when you go outside London. So the sorts of packages you can focus on can be different. We can have 1.5 litre more premium price packages in central London and sell other packages, multi-packs, in different combinations in areas of higher economic stress. So to use the segmentation either geographically or with the packaging options by expanding the range of the SKUs available to be able to capture value where there is value, and there still are pockets of value in Europe, but also maintain people in the category by using affordability. That's the essence of what we've been able to do.
Thanks, James. I think we're out of time, and there's a half an hour refreshment break. Thank you.